You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of August 28th, 2019, and we don't want any materia, we want huge materia.
Welcome back, everybody. This is the Experience Points podcast. My name is Scott Juster.
And I'm George Albor.
We are the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net, and we're back in Final Fantasy VII.
We're in the saddle.
A long break, but we are back. If you last listened to our show, we had finished the Forgotten City. We had, spoiler alert, lost Aeris to that villainous Sephiroth.
What a scum.
And we're going to talk about the game up through the point where a lot happens in this section, but at a certain point, Cloud leaves the party and then he comes back, and that's where we're going to stop.
Yep. Which is very exciting because I forgot that happened.
Yep.
And you texted me, you're like, oh, when Cloud comes back. And I was like, what? Are you thinking Chrono Trigger? That didn't happen.
So I will say that this section, probably more than any other section, I had the least recollection of.
100% agreed.
I was just along for the ride.
I mean, just to start us off then, why do you think that is? I mean, okay, well, let's put it out there.
I have two theories.
Okay, because it's pretty buck wild.
Yes.
So what are your theories?
Theory one is that whenever I've restarted playing this game, I get about up to Aeris and then I stop playing for whatever reason.
Because you're just too sad Aeris is gone.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, I can't go on. And the second is because this section of the game, I don't want to say it makes no sense, but there are some wild logical plot leaps that happen in this that make it just very hard to remember.
Yes. I mean, there are moments when I was playing through this where I was like, I don't really understand. How did I ever think I knew what was happening? Look, it's 2019, and when people ask me, what are your favorite Final Fantasies? You know, Final Fantasy VIII's number one, but then I put Final Fantasy VII behind it. Mm-hmm. And when I say Final Fantasy VII, I think I know what I'm talking about. I realized after playing this section, I have no clue. And I've basically been a liar for the past, 20 years.
That was the crazy thing, too, where like when we were first playing this as teenagers, why did we think we could follow the plot?
I don't think we could have. I mean, honestly, I don't think.
Were we fooling ourselves?
I genuinely believe we didn't know the plot of Final Fantasy VII, and first off, I don't think I currently know the plot of Final Fantasy VII. I think that what we fell in love with are the world and the individual characters, and some of those larger plot arcs. Right. Are the tools that allowed us to express why we liked those characters, you know? But even some fundamental moments. Like, I remember there was something weird with Cloud, but I didn't fully understand all of the intricacies of his false identity.
Yes.
You know? And if you had asked me, what is the deal with Cloud, at any point over the last 20 years, I think I would have told you a completely inaccurate assessment of who he is.
If you were to ask me now, I'm pretty sure I would tell you an inaccurate assessment because the plot is so weird in this point.
It's super weird. All right, so we start in the icy area. So we basically leave Aeris.
Yeah, we leave Aeris. We go out of the Forgotten City, and basically this is the point where it kind of becomes. You know, the man in black fled across the continent and Cloud followed.
Yes.
you're continuing to follow Sephiroth to try to reckon with him.
Yeah.
And you go up to the mountainous, snowy area.
Yeah.
Which, I completely forgotten this sequence even existed.
Completely. I did remember a minigame, though. So when that happened, I was like...
snowboarding minigame?
Yes. Yeah. In fact, the very first screenshot, the way that I like to have these conversations is by going through the screenshots that I take while I play. Mm. The very first screenshot is a quote that says, My boy got hurt right about the time we moved here. I never should have got him that snowboard.
Finally.
Great line. Great line. I find it super bizarre that moments after Ares dies, you know, within a relatively short amount of time, you're back on the snowboard minigame bullshit.
I mean, you can't let that, you know, you can't let it get you down. You have to go on with your life, and snowboarding is part of your life.
And that snowboard minigame is so long.
Oh, yeah. It's a long ride down that mountain.
Oh, my God.
So you're pursuing Sephiroth. Before you even get on the snowboard, they have this major exposition dump of Professor Gast and Hojo and Ifalna, all of that stuff around the backstory of the ancients, basically. Yep. Sephiroth's mom? Because that's who they used to
Genova, yeah.
Create Genova. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that sequence is weird because I wrote down in my notes that this is both sweet and creepy at the same time.
Yeah.
Because this guy is clearly studying her as a test subject, but also apparently they get married and then eventually, you know, they're going to start a family.
Yeah. Is it Hojo that's doing that?
Hojo is the one that takes over. Like, Hojo busts in and kidnaps her.
That's
and
right,
kills
that's right.
Gast.
Right.
And basically you get this huge exposition dump of who the Cetra were and, you know, the core conflict of the Cetra was, and like how some of them were migratory, some of them stayed behind, they're attuned with the planet, blah, blah, blah.
I must not have cared about that because I did not take any screenshots of that.
It's a long sequence too, because you're going through the notes and you're looking at the notes, and then they do basically a recap or a flashback rather of the sequence, and the sequence is all of this is being videotaped, so you're going through the stock footage basically.
Yep.
So anyway, I thought that was, I mean, again, this is full of weird exposition, but you learn a little bit more about the origins of the Cetra, the origins of Sephiroth, and how Hojo is even more of a douchebag than you thought he was.
Yeah, A+ douchebag. Yeah. Well, he continues to be.
Yeah, exactly. He's one of the core. He's one of the key douchebags.
Yeah, the key douchebags. Yeah.
So the mountain sequence. The mountain sequence is fairly extended. Actually, you go through that area where there's a blizzard, and you have to kind of make your way through a relatively like unmapped area, which I thought was an interesting mechanic.
Yeah, you mean the sort of weird, almost like a maze, right?
Yep. Yeah, exactly.
That's also the section where you have to keep your body temperature up.
Yeah, where you're just like mashing on the button to shimmy, basically.
Which isn't really like, that's not a difficult element. I don't know. They're going back to some of the discussion early on, but they really do shoe in some mini games here for no reason.
Yeah, in this sequence by itself, there is a weird racing snowboarding mini game. There's a weird quick time, keep yourself warm, jump from platform to platform minigame. There is a, hey, we're gonna mess with the map and you're going to have to, you know, remember your cardinal directions based off of a paper map minigame. I mean, there's just so many, this game is just chock full of gimmicks at every turn.
Which I should say, I totally just dumb lucked my way through that maze. I did not like write anything down. I was just like, I don't know, this way?
Yeah, it's not super hard. And plus, like, once you look at the map, you realize there's only a couple junction points. It's just that you have to, you know, you either have to choose right or you have to like eliminate each junction point until you move around.
Yep. Yep.
And it's funny at this point, I am not really having any trouble with the enemies, even though I haven't really been doing any grinding. Like how are you at this point in terms of like equipment and outfit and everything?
I think I'm probably having a harder time than you because there have been several moments where I'll like almost die and then I will basically like turn on all my turbo cheats to survive and make it through long enough. I don't know if maybe I just didn't grind enough and that I maybe used the speeding around as like a crutch. Or if I'm just bad at video games. The other thing is I think I did something weird where like some of my material was on the wrong person and they like left the scene for some reason or something.
Yeah, so I ran into this problem because at a certain point later that we'll get to, you you're forced to take Tifa into your party, which eliminates one of the three people you could. It eliminates one of the three core people that you may have been rolling with. And I didn't realize until I dug through the menus that you can actually exchange materia with people not in your party.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
God damn it.
I don't know if this was an original feature or a feature added for any of the subsequent remakes, but when you're in the materia menu, something that looks just like a label is actually a menu, and it allows you to click on it and allows you to sort materia or switch materia between characters. And you can switch such that you can even take their entire materia outfit and just lift and shift it onto another character. You don't even have to do equipment? It individually. Not the equipment, just the materia. But it goes over in the same configuration too. So if your equipment has the same linked slots, then that's just a time convenience for you.
Oh, interesting.
But I had to dig for that because I was just cursing the game. I was like, I cannot believe I have to rotate people into my party, dump their materia, remember where I put it. But then there's this like tiny hidden in like three different menus quality of life feature that. Again, I don't know if this is in the original game, but it's definitely in this one.
Well, I'm glad you told me because I have not figured that out until you just told me now. So I will do that. That's great.
Yeah, it's very useful.
The other thing is,
who are you rolling with, by the way?
During this section, I was using Red and I was using Vincent. Okay. And I actually think that Vincent was probably a bad call because I don't think I bought some of his higher end gear, and then his ultimate goes into beast form. So I actually dropped him right around the section because at some point you fight Genova Death, which is like, you know, some weird, I don't know, I assume just the mutant cells of Genova grew into some nasty creature. And when he's in his ultimate mode, you can't decide what he does. And one of his abilities actually heals her.
Oh, man.
So I found myself taking an extra long time in that fight because I would, every now and then, he would heal her when he was in his ultimate mode.
Oh, God. That's brutal.
Yeah, a little unfortunate. And after that fight, I was like, you know what, Vincent? I don't think so. So I swapped him out for Yuffie, I believe.
I like the characters that can hang out in the back row without having a penalty to their attack.
Yep.
Like all the long range characters are just a nice, it's a more casual, like, okay, I don't have to worry about this character taking the brunt of all the damage.
Yeah. And the other thing is I didn't quite appreciate having two people in your party that could be a little bit stockier, you know, like I really have loaded all of the summons and stuff on Red and it diminishes your maximum HP. And
significantly too. Some of them are like minus 10%.
Right, and so he's basically, at this point, Red can easily be one-shot, you know? So it's very, and a lot of the spells that I put on him are the ones that are key to the whole game, right? Like, when you get late game, you want to always be casting Haste, you want to always be casting Barrier, and if your timing is off, where, like, you just don't get the second one off before you then have to get into a cycle of healing, it could be a little rough. And it's actually nice to have Yuffie in the party because her ultimate can also heal the whole party, so it's kind of a nice, like, little clutch heal when I'm using Red, who's my main, you know, buffing and spellcasting character to load everybody out.
I did, at this point, I did fall back into the rhythm of remembering that this game is very, the buffs are very important. So, like, spreading out someone who, if you can start the battle with someone casting Haste and someone casting, you know, Regen or something like that, then
you're just in such a better position.
You know, it's just like, you don't get into, like, to your point, it's really easy to get into heal debt where you're just trying to dig out of, you know, taking grievous damage and not being able to attack, like, for cycles on end.
Yeah. And it's jumping ahead a little bit, but eventually you fight a boss that has two mechanical arms and one of them can grab someone in your party member. So during the first fight with that boss, it grabbed Red and I was like, okay, well, I mean, I'm basically dead at this point because I'm not going to be able to get them out enough. And like other people were injured and they didn't get the heal off. So I've definitely actually died probably three or four times since we last spoke.
Yeah, the game, especially I feel like the bosses get pretty intense where they do have these extremely powerful spells that put you into debt, and then it's hard to dig out of it after that.
Yeah. I do have to say, though, I think that in terms of some of the like options available, this game has some really great summon animations. Mm-hmm. Like when you have Bahamut or when you get Neo Bahamut, like it just looks really freaking cool.
This was the beginning. I mean, I feel like Final Fantasy VIII was basically the apex of this, where the summons took like 5 minutes each to animate or whatever. And this was the beginning of just the kind of the graphical showcase.
Yep.
At the time.
Well, and they feel appropriately powerful as well.
Yeah. Especially the Bahamut stuff.
Yeah.
So okay, where does that leave us? So at that point you make your way through the snow, you get into the crater where where the first time Comet hit the Earth, it created this. I thought this was an interesting little throwaway, not quite a throwaway, but they didn't dwell too much of it. Where this is basically a scar on the Earth where it's still healing after all of these years, and so it's just this place that the life force is closer to the surface. And I don't know, I just thought it was kind of
so
a cool
close
story.
You can just take a little swim.
Yeah, you can just take a dip into it.
Yeah, a little dip.
Another mini game where you have to get through the currents, basically the windy areas where you have to go through the little life force fields.
Yep.
Yeah, another mini game. Genova Death.
Yep.
Difficult boss, and then this is where things really start getting weird. Because you start confronting Sephiroth.
Yep.
Again, there's a huge amount of exposition here. Yeah. And then it really starts to call into question just what the hell Cloud even is.
Yes. This is the section where you go back to Nibelheim.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. You start to flash back again. And it's also clear that Sephiroth still has some sort of power over Cloud as well.
Yep. Well, I mean, we kind of knew that already when Cloud is forced to kill Ares, right?
That's true. Yeah, when he tries it, or when he can't move back or whatever. So it's funny when you're going into the Sephiroth confrontation, they're like, you should probably not take the black materia with you if you're gonna go face Sephiroth.
Yep.
And you have the option as to who to give it to, and I tried every single person, and Red 13 was the only one that would take it.
What?
Yeah.
Really?
I don't know if there is any randomness there, but I went to every single party member just to see, because it was clear that I think Red 13 was the one that they were trying to steer you towards, but I just wanted to see what would happen.
Well, I mean,
if you
is that canonically true? I mean, looking at my screenshots, and I have the option to give it to Barrett, but does he just refuse? Maybe I'm forgetting who I gave it to.
In my experience anyway, I tried to give it to each person, and they were like, no, or they directed me somewhere else.
That's kind of cold.
Yeah, it is kind of weird.
Hey, do me a solid, team. I mean, Red doesn't even have hands. Maybe that's the idea.
And then, yeah, going back to Nibelheim, calling into question all of these memories.
Yep. They props to the game. They do call out whether or not you went into Tifa's drawers.
I was just going to say that. There's a lot of callbacks of when you're Sephiroth basically starts to question Cloud's sanity and his whether his memories are real or manufactured.
Yep.
And at a certain point, you do start to remember what you did in Tifa's room. And it's like, no, I played the piano. And it's like, oh, cool. I did play the piano. Like, you know, good job, game.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty cool. This is where Sephiroth calls you a puppet.
Right.
And he explains that you were made by Hojo.
Yep.
And
you're basically a clone.
Yep. You're made out of the cell. You're related. You're bros.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he says you're basically an incomplete Sephiroth clone.
Yeah.
I love the idea that when you reveal who Cloud actually is, he's a nobody. You know?
Yes.
Like he's effectively a nobody.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's a really nice touch, you know, because he's so gung-ho, you know, and at the beginning of the game, he's a badass that's joined this, like, paramilitary group, and he joined Soldier, and Soldier's only the best of the best, and he did join, but he didn't really accomplish much.
Yeah, I thought that was cool. It was a nice, I mean, it's, in its own little way, it's subversive to a traditional, especially RPG story of, oh, you're the chosen hero, the hero of time. Yep. And now it's you pretend like you're a badass, but really you're a washout. You tried to join the elite soldiers and you failed.
Yeah. And not just that, but you hid your identity when you went to Nibelheim. Yeah. Because you didn't want to be called out for being a failure.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I thought that was cool.
And it's also cool that it's coming from, like, this conversation is happening with Tifa.
Yeah.
Because that's the person you wanted to impress, you know?
And when they start to, the nice thing about, or the insidious thing about Sephiroth's reveal is that it basically shakes the confidence in your entire party.
Right.
Where everyone is like, what is going on? Cloud, I don't even know who you are. Tifa's kind of like, don't talk to me. It was, as far as evil guys go, this was a very good evil move.
Yeah, totally. But it's brought on by Cloud himself, right? Like, I mean, to be fair, he couldn't remember any of this, but I mean, he could have come clean maybe like way back in Nibelheim. I don't know.
Right, right.
My question is, who is Zane?
Or like, Zach.
Zach or whatever. Yeah. Is it Zach? Okay.
Yeah. Zach. Yeah. I mean, we know what happens to Zach later on in the game.
Yeah, I mean, like, he does. Yeah, he clearly, like, gets, you know, kicks the bucket. But, man, that guy really got shortchanged, you know?
So, all of that is revealed. Cloud is... This is the point where Cloud is basically tossed off the cliff or something, right? Like... the weapon starts to emerge.
Yeah, like he confronts Hojo and is like, I was a failed experiment, I'm terrible. Like he apologizes to everybody. Like everyone is just basically like picking on poor little Cloud.
Yeah.
And then Godzilla wakes up.
I had forgotten about this too.
Well, I also before that, it's revealed that even, I guess we already knew this, but I didn't really fully make sense of it, but like even the Sephiroth you're chasing isn't the real Sephiroth, because Sephiroth is like stuck in a crystal.
Well, it makes more sense later in the game when you see what happened to Sephiroth after Nibelheim part one. You know, it's like, right. Oh, he fell in the life stream then, and now he's been kind of orchestrating all of this, you know. Hojo had to clone him because Sephiroth was either dead/gone, and it's kind of out of order for it to make chronological sense, but it made more sense to me after I played that second sequence.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, but Cloud, you know, of course, comes into, was it Cloud or was it Sephiroth? Sephiroth pretends that he's Cloud and grabs the materia, or does he?
I think Cloud hands control? It. Oh, I don't remember that. That's a good question.
Cloud definitely hands it to Sephiroth through the crystal, and then...
I wasn't sure if he was being mind-controlled or if he was just doing it because he was having, like, a crisis? Like, a psychological crisis?
I mean, probably all of the above, but, I mean, this is... The point is that he, yet again, Sephiroth has his number and basically can manipulate him at any turn... And brings a disaster upon the party.
Yep. It's pretty great.
Sephiroth takes control. The weapon emerges from the live stream.
We gotta talk about weapon. I took so many screenshots of this fucking bad boy. This Mechagodzilla ripoff looks so dope. And I completely forgot that he existed. Yep. And his existence in this entire game, like this whole sequence where he's like flying around the planet and is like a threat to everybody, is so weird. I cannot get enough.
Well, and you have a bunch of time skips here too.
Yep.
Where there's, Shinra and basically the world kind of at a certain point calls an uneasy truce because there's a fucking monster flying around.
Yep.
And they have to figure out what to do with it.
Yeah. And they're like fighting it and like not fighting it. Like, I don't really, it's not entirely clear. To some extent, it's not entirely clear why they want to stop Weapon, because Weapon, they claim, was an answer that the Earth came to when shit was about to go down, right? Like, isn't this the Earth's solution to the problem?
I mean, I think the implication is it's the solution, but it's also the solution that will wipe out a good portion of humanity with it.
But so will the meteor.
I mean, I think we've established that like Final Fantasy VII is a fairly bleak game and just in terms of humanity's contribution to the planet.
I mean, that's very true. I mean, and even the end, which we'll talk to eventually, right? But like, I guess my question is, what is Weapon's job here? Is it to stop Meteor, or is it to cleanse the planet of the humans that are stealing all the Gaia and mana force?
Or I mean, I think it's both. I mean, Sephiroth had to be stopped, right?
Right.
And I don't know if Weapon is distinguishing.
Yep.
But it's fun that the Shinra people are at least kind of tacitly allied with the planet for once, until yes. you realize that they're just going to put on a sham trial and blame Avalanche for bringing disaster upon them.
Yeah, they control all the mainstream media, I guess.
Fox the News. Lamestream media, as I like to call it.
Wake up, sheeple.
Wake up, sheeple. Weapon is here to punish us.
Yeah, I don't know. It's bizarre because at some point, so for a while, you're like stuck inside of the Shinra base, whatever. Weapon attacks and it's super dope. Yeah. But at some point, you can go around the world again. Like you can move around the map.
Yep. Yeah.
For the most part, like people will talk about things, but it seems pretty chill, despite yeah. the fact that there is both an enormous meteor coming to Earth and a huge Mechagodzilla monster attacking everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought the sequence, the kind of trial / escape sequence from Shinra, where you were trying to escape at the same time Weapon was attacking the town that you were in.
Yes.
And they're trying to fire a huge cannon at it, but also it's taking chunks out of the ceiling as it attacks. Like
yep.
That whole sequence I thought was pretty cool.
I agree. And it culminated in a slap fight between Scarlet and Tifa on the head of a cannon, which was just so choice.
That's exactly what I wrote down in my notes. I just wrote down slap fight.
Slap fight. I could not believe that. I mean, besides the slap fight, I agree with you. I think that whole sequence is super cool. And when Tifa like runs down the cannon and jumps off, like that's super cool. Very dramatic. And like,
the music just swells at that point. Yeah.
Yeah. And you even like think that she misses for a second and then grabs the rope. It was pretty cool. I mean, the animations, you know, have much to be desired this many years after its release. But
yeah.
I actually think this whole sequence taken and implanted into the Final Fantasy VII remake will actually be super rad.
That's true, actually. Just thinking about putting that together, fighting the ground soldiers behind the backdrop of a huge monster attacking is a cool setup.
Yep. Totally.
It's weird the inconsistency by which the cutscenes work continues to puzzle me, where sometimes the characters are rendered polygonally, where it's yep. just a cutscene background. Sometimes the characters are rendered in chibi form, but they're rendered in full motion video animated. Sometimes they're rendered as full-size, regular proportioned humans. There's no consistency in what you're going to get. You know, whatever yeah. cutscene, it's just totally random whether they look like weird little Cupid dolls or if they look like full-on, you know, anime characters.
Yeah, and the chase sequence when Tifa jumps off is especially jarring because everything else looks pretty good. But yeah. she looks like... It's like I'm watching the Lego movie. It's yes, very bizarre. Yeah.
It's just a weird... I don't know how... or why they chose to render in what style in what scenes. Like, it's just yep. kind of a weird, yeah.
My guess is whoever they had available on staff that day to do it.
Sorry, I only do chibi, guys. I don't know what to... fine, do it.
Steve the chibi guy's at it again. okay, so we've abandoned Cloud. What did you think of that? I know we talked a little bit about it in the beginning, but...
yeah.
To me, it wasn't as jarring or impactful as it was in Chrono Trigger, where it really yeah. felt like, oh man, this is very, very different. And yep. maybe it's because we knew, like, oh, Cloud comes back and you can mm-hmm. deal with it. But I don't think that the game actually did a very good job of leaning into the rest of its cast of characters. I mean, there's some okay stuff with Tifa in this moment, but yeah. when you eventually find wheelchair... psychologically reduced to yeah. ashes version of Cloud
yep.
and she decides to stay, it's extra unfortunate because then it kicks over ownership of the team to Cid
yeah randomly
yeah, which is so bad. And at this point I had not used Cid at all in my party.
Yeah,
he doesn't really contribute to the main storyline in any significant way, but he's meant to be taken as the leader
yeah.
and it just felt like you had this opportunity to reestablish the dynamics of the group without Cloud, mm-hmm. especially, I think, the Barret and Tifa relationship, which is pre-established from all of the Avalanche stuff. Yeah. And they just really dropped the ball. Like, I think this whole sequence between losing Cloud and getting him back, while somewhat interesting in regards to, like, the larger, you know, like, the stuff with the egg and some of the quote-unquote huge materia stuff is cool. But, man, I just think that the characters during the sequence that you normally play with are just completely wasted.
There are some... This is kind of where I get the sense, more so than in maybe any other sequence, all of the story stuff, all of the leadership vacuum stuff, it really feels like the translation is hurting it here.
Oh, because you think?
I just get the sense that there's more happening because the shorthand that they're using... It's hard to catch, but there are places where even Barrett says, you know, I don't even know if I want Cloud to come back. I thought that was a really interesting sequence. Also, I'm also not really a leader. And it's like, what are you talking about? You led Avalanche the whole time. And so, like, there's probably something happening there where he either doesn't want to be responsible for it, or he feels like he's kind of tainted and you need someone that is a little bit cleaner to be the leader. Because right after he says he doesn't want to be the leader, Sid makes some comment about, well, okay, I guess it's going to be me. And then Barrett makes a very direct comment about, well, I'm not cut out to be a leader, but here's what we should do. And then, Sid, what do you think? Basically, like, I just need your rubber stamp on this.
Yeah.
And so I feel like there is some nuance lost.
Man, you are reading deep into Barrett, man. He's really rubbed off on you.
But that's what I like. Barrett has some weird one-off lines where he basically describes exactly what you need to do, just as a quest perspective.
Yeah.
And says something to the tone of, but that's just my opinion, Sid. What do you think? And clearly, Sid has no idea what he's doing, and Barrett is still kind of calling the shots. But he doesn't want to be in that position. Which, again, I just feel like there's something. And again, I'm not like slagging on the people that made the translation. I'm more slagging on the fact that there are technical limitations around the size of the text boxes that, man, side note, there is a Kotaku series from Tim Rogers, who is, infamously verbose video game critic.
Yes.
Where he does basically scene by scene breakdowns of Final Fantasy VII, like the initial sequence of the train heist and stuff, where he talks about the Japanese version versus the US version. And it's really informed a lot of how I look at what was included in the translation versus what wasn't.
Yeah.
And the more I look at it, the more I just see kind of his point of there's just so much nuance in the original text that physically could not fit in the English translation. And I feel like this is just this whole sequence of trying to explain the nature of what Cloud really is, trying to explain the nature of Genova, trying to explain Sid's dynamic with the rest of the team, that it just feels like there's so much under the surface that we're not getting, you know.
For the Final Fantasy VII remake, are they doing full voice?
It was in the E3 trailer, there was definitely full voice. I mean, that sequence that I watched.
Man, see, this is... I mean, I know we'll probably talk about this when we do like our end wrap conversation about Final Fantasy VII, but it's moments like these where I hope that the changes are actually drastic, you know?
Yeah.
And I think I mentioned it last time, but I think they should just remove Sid entirely. Like, imagine the scene playing out where they remove Sid completely from the game, and instead Barrett is taking on the leadership role, or maybe you choose who's taking on the leadership role based upon conversations with the crew or something, you know, and you have a bit more nuance here instead of someone that is, I mean, frankly, an outsider and completely tangential to the main storyline taking on this role of a quote unquote leader in what is like an actually pretty critical moment in the team's overall mission, and that their leader is gone, you know?
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean, there's not even a moment where Sid expresses the weight of it, you know? Whereas, as you said, I think Barrett does in that scene. You know? Like, I have a screenshot of Sid's comment where he says, okay, I'll do it. Everyone follow me. Like, that's not...
That's it was kind of cool. Played for laughs. Like, it was played where Sid was just kind of this blowhard that didn't really know what he was doing, but it felt at odds with the gravity of the situation.
Yeah, and the gravity of even some of the scenes that come afterwards, right? Like, when you go back to the Eagle's Nest, and they steal the huge materia from that. They like fire a fucking missile at the bird or something. Something bonkers happens where like the bird is basically exploded, right? Like,
yeah.
That eagle is one of, I think, the most iconic images that are in the game.
Yeah.
I think it appears pretty early on, and I think it's one of the stronger symbols of that nature versus technology divide. Yeah. And that its nest is built upon that reactor.
Mm.
I think that scene could have been played more dramatically if the crew who's there, right, who theoretically experienced it, are reacting to it in a way that is a bit more realistic, right? Like,
yeah.
I think that there's a lot of chaff in this area, in this section, yeah. And even just sort of recommending removing one of the huge materia you have to get at all, right?
Yeah.
And leaning into it and buying more time and letting the weight of what's going on and the weight of the fate of the world, like, really weigh on the characters, I think would be far more interesting.
It's a tough challenge because I felt the same way. Like, one of my notes was just, simply put, this sequence is a structural mess. I mean, it's just, you're all over the place. You're doing these weird chase down missions of huge materia. It's not even quite clear what you're going to do with it.
You're trying to remember the names of locations you've been to only once.
Right. Yeah. You're just going to random towns and hoping that a quest giver will point you in the right direction. But then again, you have to do some quests without Cloud if you want the mechanical impact of not having him in your party. So they're stuck in this awkward position of they've removed Cloud from the party, and it lands in a questionable way narratively. And so then they have to justify it with the mechanics of doing a few missions without him. But those missions are, you know, kind of humdrum and weirdly strung together.
Yeah.
And so you're in this position of, kind of to your point, maybe you shouldn't even have done that in the first place because you just seem to be stuck in between either a boring plot point or boring missions, both trying to justify each other.
Yeah. I mean, let's think about Chrono Trigger for a second, right?
Yeah.
That's
let's think about Chrono Trigger. I mean, much happier.
That is a moment where when Chrono leaves the party, you've got a crew of characters that have been interacting with one another separately from him throughout the entire game, and they continue to do so, and you can find really emotional, poignant moments without him.
Yep.
And who you choose to be in your party during those moments really kind of defines the way that you think those characters, in an almost role-playing way, would behave absent their leader, right?
Yeah.
And I distinctly remember when I made the decision that Frog was going to be my leader with Chrono gone, and then when he comes back, it had sort of emotional impact where I had to think about, even though it's not explicitly said, what would Frog's reaction be here now that he's being replaced? You know, like, there's just a lot of interesting character relationships that have been defined without the lead character so that when he leaves, you both feel his absence, but you still feel as though something is progressing in terms of their relationships.
Yeah.
That just doesn't happen here.
I mean, it's a testament to Chrono Trigger's strength where Chrono Trigger came out 2 years before Final Fantasy. So in the same era, you had real character interaction and development, things that made you care about those characters. And also the mechanical openness of it. If you wanted to, you don't have to get Chrono back in your party. You can, you can play the rest of the game and finish it without Chrono. And so there's thematically, it makes a stronger point where the story is actually bigger than one person.
Yep.
And so even though the story in Final Fantasy VII is trying to say that Cloud is a nobody, the procedural rhetoric is still saying that Cloud is crucial to the story.
Yes.
Because there's no way to leave him gone, you know?
Yeah. Man, Buckwild Chrono Trigger. I just remember thinking, too, because when Chrono comes back, he's never, like, a voiced character.
Yeah.
So it's just like, man, what happened when he was gone? Like, there's all this, like, extra baggage that comes with him. It's great.
Yeah. All of that being said, so this is kind of towards the tail end of this section. You go back to where Tifa is tending to Cloud, and shit gets real because Weapon finds you again, and then
and the animation of him flying through the sky is so amazing. I love it
because it's just kind of like a 1960s Godzilla look to him, where it's just kind of like it looks like he's on wires.
Yeah, 100%. He's like, his wings aren't flapping at all. He's just moving stationarily through the sky or whatever. It's so good.
Because of Weapon's attack and the instability of the life force, just the entire town starts to sink into the current of the life force. Tifa and Cloud get dumped in the drink again, and then there's this surreal sequence where Tifa and Cloud are both in the life force together, and they're figuring out the nature of Cloud's background.
Yep.
Which I actually thought, as cheesy and weird as it was, it makes the stuff with Sephiroth make a lot more sense in retrospect.
I totally agree. And I don't really know how they could have done this. I don't know. Like, I almost wish in a way they dumped the exposition and just had this do more work.
Right.
Especially because I think that what we were talking about before, where Cloud is kind of weak, like, it's much more better expressed here, you know? Like, his head is bowed through much of these sequences. He's, like, ashamed of himself. There's just a lot of, like, trauma that he's going through. It's very much, what is that Tim Schafer game? Psychonauts. Psychonauts? It's like Psychonauts.
Yeah.
You know? Like, this is it's like Psychonauts, where, like, you're inside Cloud's mind trying to fix things, but...
Yeah.
I liked it, and I really enjoy seeing him as a little kid and the way that he's remembering his past. Like, I thought all that stuff was really effective.
Well, and the way that, just the way that kids conceive of themselves, where even Cloud himself in this memory sequence thought, oh yeah, I thought I was so mature and so cool, and actually in retrospect, I was just isolating myself, and I wish I hadn't done that. It's like that stuff actually seemed really meaningful. And also, I found it powerful that Cloud isn't this mythic hero. He's just some weird loner that decided he would try to prove himself to some unrequited crush that he never expressed his feelings to by going to join an elite soldier force and then failing and then hiding his face when he came back to the town.
Yeah, so good. Yeah, I like that a lot. I also like the way that they copy his internal dialogue and his external dialogue. Like, he's actually saying it, and then they're showing what he's thinking.
Yes.
Which I think is cool, especially because it implies that through much of the game, he probably wasn't doing that.
Yeah.
I really enjoy going more into Tifa's background as well. I wish that we could have had more flashbacks with other characters, you know?
Yeah.
Because I do think it's pretty strong. We see Zack die. Poor Zack. Never forget.
Man, Zack is fucked up. But then Cloud just gets one over on Sephiroth by sneaking up behind him and stabbing him.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
And then getting stabbed himself and throwing him into the reactor core.
Yep, yeah.
I mean, and that was, I think, I don't know how I feel about whether that is that just like a vindication of his hero story, or is that actually a turning point where Cloud realizes that the way to be a hero is not to join the elite force and be a show off. It's to do the right thing in the right context. And there you go. Like, I guess you could make the argument either way for Cloud. But if you're being charitable to him, you're saying he redeemed himself by doing what he needed to do at the crucial time.
I mean, I read it the first way, because when I first saw it, like, when he throws Sephiroth, like, he throws him up and, like, across, I took a video of it because I was like, what? And he throws him across the room and then down.
Yeah.
There was something about the way that was animated that I was like, oh, maybe he is preternaturally strong here, or maybe he is, like, destined or something. So I was not charitable with that reading, but.
Yeah, I mean, and I think in the end, it doesn't actually matter that much, which is more of a shame, because it means that character itself is just more simple. Like, Cloud, regardless of his background, Cloud is shown to be, for whatever reason, a crucial character in the story, and you can't really opt out of it in the same way that you can opt out of Chrono being a crucial character.
Yep.
And so it goes right up to the edge of the trope of the heralded hero or whatever, but it still defaults pretty firmly back to that trope, I would say.
Yeah, and I think it would have been interesting to see the weight of what has been revealed about him. Like, I think it would have been, and we're jumping ahead, because this is the point where Cloud comes back into your party, but they sort of move on as though it never really happened. And I think it would have been interesting to see Cloud or Tifa or other crew members just behave differently, you know? Yeah. Like, we have a moment where Cloud is basically revealed to be the Shinji from Evangelion, you know? Like, He's kind of like a shitty dude who was like crushing really hard and did some dumb shit. Like he joined the military to impress a girl and is actually has extremely low self-esteem and thinks he's not worthy. You know, like though he's got all this mental baggage and I want to see the party deal with that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. All I have is a screenshot of towards the end of the sequence when they're when they have their reunion in the airship. Tifa just says, "You're sure messed up, Cloud." It's like, word, Tifa. I could not put it better myself.
Exactly. But I mean, come on. Like, they're all messed up, right? Like, I just, I don't know. I just want to see people wrestle with their own personal demons more, I guess. Yeah. And the problem is we're reaching the crescendo point, you know? Like, this is becoming the moment where the team pursues Sephiroth with more ferocity, and we're getting towards the end. Like, we've had our denouement, or we've had our downturn in tone. So that's kind of why, like, I don't know, it would have been interesting to see what this would have been like had they found a way to integrate some of these things earlier, you know?
Right.
Like, what if this wasn't a reveal? You know, what if we knew that Cloud was a fake all along, and how would that have changed the experience of watching?
It would have been interesting to, like, even start from the very beginning of the game where maybe Cloud had more of an internal monologue, and every once in a while he could say something like, "Well, if only they knew the real truth," or "I wonder if I even believe this story."
Yeah.
It would just have seeded some of this stuff, you know?
Because all we get is him going, "I think I remembered it that way." Or, like, you know, there's weird little things that are slightly off. But for the most part, that's not the crux of that story arc. What we have here are essentially, like, three or four different reveals, you know? Like, Cloud isn't really Cloud. He's actually a clone of Sephiroth. And Sephiroth isn't Sephiroth either. And there's Weapon. Right. And there's all of these stacked reveals. And I think that you could have moved that reveal of Cloud not being Cloud much earlier and still had these, like, impactful moments where it's like, not only was he not Cloud, but he's a clone or whatever, right? Like, that still could have been interesting to tell, but it would add a bit more complexity to Cloud's character from the beginning. And that's something we voiced in the very first episode of our mega long debrief, right? Cloud is an uninteresting, kind of a douchebaggy character. If we knew that his douchebaggery was coming from an attempt to project himself as this perfect image of a overpowered soldier, I think that we would have been more favorable in our readings of him and his behavior to the team, right? That explains why he was doing that, but we just don't get that until so late in the game.
Right. The plot assumes that the drama should come from the surprise of the reveal rather than the in-universe characters grappling with the surprise, where you know, the drama is because the player realizes this versus the interpersonal relationships with the characters and reckoning with that. And it's, I think both of us are kind of like, that's probably like a miscalculation.
Yep, definitely.
So I mean, that takes us up to where we're at. I mean, I mean, thinking about this, I think we maybe have two episodes left, because there's one. It's either one or two episodes, depending on how we want to do it. Because we still need to get the last piece of huge materia.
Yeah, huge.
Huge materia.
They could not have thought of a better name than huge materia.
We started with big materia, but didn't find it big enough.
I don't know. Like, dark, maybe?
I mean, they already have the black materia from that, you know, from, you know, earlier in the game.
Huge materia.
The best materia.
Okay, cool.
You won't believe this materia.
Yeah, wow.
So we'll have to get the last piece there, and then there's kind of a confrontation with Weapon before you go into the final sequence of Sephiroth, and I think that's kind of a natural stopping point, because there's also some side quests that happen there.
Sure.
And I feel like we'll probably have a lot to talk about with Sephiroth and the ending and how that all wraps up. So I think probably what we'll do is, there's kind of a climactic battle at Midgar that we'll probably stop at right before we go into the endgame sequence.
Yep.
So for people following along, I think the next stop is the big showdown at Midgar.
Next stop, Midgar.
I'm excited to get back to Midgar, actually. I think that's probably the most interesting place in the game. Yep. And I'm interested to go back to it. And there's a bunch of side quests that we haven't really talked about. I don't know how much I'll actually get to, but that we'll start to get into that next and then maybe in the final episode.
Cool. Yeah, and then we'll wrap with a sort of larger discussion as well. Because then once we have the ending, we could talk a little bit about
The meta. Our
thoughts on the whole game. Exactly. Yeah, and then there's just a lot. This has caused me to think a lot more about my expectations and about what I want from the remake.
Yes.
That same. I just hadn't anticipated. So.
Yep. Very. Yeah. I feel very similarly. Cool. All right. I guess that's a pretty hefty episode. So we'll leave it there for now. Experience points. You might call it a huge episode. experiencepoints at gmail.com is our email address.
And experiencepoints.net is our website. You can find all the hugest episodes. listen to them all. Stitcher. We're on Spotify. Wherever fine podcasts are sold.
All right. Thanks, everyone, for listening. And until next week, we'll talk to you soon.
Ciao. We'll be right back.